Live in concert, Paul Wilbur. I Lift Up My Eyes. That's from his Shalom Jerusalem album. Well, that's one concert I wish I'd attended. That would have been a great one. Outdoors in Jerusalem, as I recall, judging from the picture.
I was glad when they said to me, come and let's go up to the house of the Lord.
Indeed. Gaither Vocal Band before that, Build an Ark, and we heard from Georgia Gibbs, too, Tweedledee Dee. And good morning to you. It's about 11 minutes past the hour. It's past 8 o'clock in the Central Time Zone. I'm Jim Park. David Allen Punt, the news guy, is with us. David, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And we're joined now by Dr. Don Clark from Texas in his bright yellow room. And is that a Hawaiian shirt I see?
Yes, I have many of these.
Ooh, it looks pretty nice.
They're comfortable down here.
It looks tremendously cheerful with that yellow background. It just brightens the whole studio here. Yeah, This Dr. Don is with he's with a lot of things, but he's also with Creation Moments. He's a biochemist, and he's our kind of official expert, our resident expert on science. And we talk a lot about science versus faith, and creation versus evolution, and things of that nature. Dr. Don, David dug up an article on the BBC page last week that he brought up in the news, and we said this. Dr. Don's got to see this, because maybe he understands it. and so we sent you, because it looked like it had something to do with evolution, like some great new discovery, some tremendous accomplishment by this whole team of scientists working. I see them working feverishly in a lab and consulting journals and writings from over generations of research and coming up with this. Tell us first, what is DNA and RNA? And maybe even TNA.
In somewhat of my not defense, but maybe edification or expansion of my comments, my first thought was, it looks like somebody's put together some tinker toys to replicate or suggest the way that evolution happened. That's the way it looked to me. Now, whether that's the way it was or not, I don't know.
I think they're claiming something more significant there, but where do we start in this discussion?
Let's start from the basics, which DNA and RNA. Well, DNA is kind of like your encyclopedia inside your cell, and DNA and RNA are related in that DNA stands for deoxyribose nucleic acid. And RNA stands for ribose nucleic acid. And the deoxy and the ribose are sugars. They form a five-ring structure. And DNA is made up of the sugar, deoxyribose, as well as a phosphate group, and a base, a nucleotide base. And it's the, if you consider DNA, Watson and Crick, of course, discovered that DNA was a double helix, which looked like a twisted ladder, and the rungs of the ladder were the base pairs, in the nucleotide base pairs in the DNA, whereas the sticks in the ladder, if you will, were made up of a phosphate ribose polymer chain.
So that's the RNA then.
That's the DNA, okay. And the difference, like I said, the difference between RNA and DNA is that RNA has this extra hydroxy group on the sugar ring, and that gives it some slightly different properties. RNA is not a double helix; it's a single strand structure, and it comes in a couple of forms, and in one is a messenger RNA, which is a copy of the DNA information, and that is taken outside the cell where ribosomes attach to them. And then you have another form of RNA called transfer RNA, which does the translation from the DNA code, if you will, which is now encoded on the RNA, and translates it into proteins. So making the story a little more complicated. So the DNA then contains the information. The RNA, the messenger RNA, transcribes the information.
Now, by information, are these genes? Is that what the information is? Is that what we call the information, genes?
Well, DNA contains many, many, many genes, thousands of genes. And so, but DNA is a very complex structure. It's not only a twisted ladder, but it's coiled, super coiled about itself, and then there's proteins that wrap around the DNA to protect it and to give it its tertiary quaternary structure, so that all this information can pack in the cell.
Which means that other cells like it can be formed. That's the purpose of this, is to transmit information from an original cell to a next generation cell?
One purpose is genetic information transfer, and another purpose is just to keep the cell alive.
Uh-huh.
Because as the cell ages, proteins degrade, and so new proteins need to be formed, and so there's a transmission to the nucleus of the cell that says, hey, I need this type of protein. And so that information gets transmitted into the nucleus, which then triggers a whole host of events, one of which is uncoiling this supercoil, and then ultimately uncoiling the double-stranded DNA into two single-stranded so that the information can be copied.
Okay, this describes how cells stay alive and how they reproduce themselves or other cells that need to perform certain functions in the body. And this research, it looks to me, says that these scientists have developed a synthetic way to do much the same thing. Is that accurate?
No, it's not. I'll explain that in a minute. One group, let me see if I can find where they're from here, they made tRNA, and T stands for threolose. So threolose is another sugar. It's a natural sugar like ribose, but instead of being a 5-carbon sugar, it's a 4-carbon sugar. So it's missing one of the carbons. So they use threolose as the kind of the backbone of their synthetic DNA and RNA structure, and then made up several multiple nucleotide base strand structures and determined, okay, well, which one binds to this protein the best? And then they said that, well, okay, if you have this particular sequence, it binds strongly. So what they're doing, I mean, the threolose DNA structure, it's still a 5-membered ring because oxygen plays a role in both of the ring structures of these sugars. So it's not altered that much from the original DNA structure.
So what is the significance is this even a discovery? I mean, what have we learned here?
Well, this is what they postulate. They postulate, well, wow. Threolose could have this threolose nucleic acid, tRNA, tRNA could have been a precursor to RNA, which could have then been a precursor to DNA. So their thinking is that, well, maybe RNA started first, since it's less complicated than DNA. Maybe in the Darwinian evolution process, RNA started first as a single chain, and then that led to DNA, which then led to, you know, this whole story of all these molecules coming together and eventually forming a cell wall and an inner cell wall and making a nucleus and all this other stuff. So they're postulating that perhaps tRNA was a precursor to RNA.
Aha. Uh-huh. So
it's just a pure conjecture on their part, just mm-hmm. because they were able to make this structure and bind it to something.
Now, it's part and partial to evolution, isn't it, that whatever state of being we're in now, we evolved from simpler beings. Is that critical to the theory?
That's the conjecture, right, that simpler structures form more complex structures.
And yet we've discovered in research that the smaller we get, it seems, the more complex we get. You've just described a very complex process with parts we haven't even named yet.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. and the process gets even more complex as the more we delve into the cell structure and the functions of all the various proteins and polysaccharides and all kinds of the fats that are in the cells and what they're for and energy molecules and so what these folks have done they have made a hybrid. Mm-hmm. They've taken the information from the cell. In this case, we're using the normal RNA nucleotides. And we've made a phosphate sugar backbone, mimicking the natural one very closely. And we made this slight modification, and voila, it seems if you've got the right nucleotide sequence, we got binding, so therefore we can make these gigantic conclusions. But this is nothing new from the point of view of evolutionary thinking or evolutionary jumps in thought, for example.
Mm. Well, it's kind of like they're saying evolution evolved.
Well, yeah, they're saying, yeah. Well, okay, here's an example. Here's a model. We have been able to make this in the lab. So since we can make it in the lab, this could have been a precursor to RNA.
To put this in perspective here, to me, a total layman, and I got to admit some of what you've described is still pretty confusing to me. I'm not following at all. But it sounds like the team of scientists, based upon thousands of pages of research and experiments and laboratory work, and maybe generations of knowledge that have been accumulated, have managed to make something that an evolution would claim happened in nature by accident.
Yes, exactly.
Ooh, and that's a big claim.
it's a big jump. Let me just read you the title of this paper. I mean, it's even the title is
it's misleading, isn't it?
It's provocative. Yeah. It's a Darwinian evolution of an alternative genetic system provides support for tna as an RNA progenitor. That means like a precursor.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, the title itself. I mean, come on, folks. I mean, you're saying in your title your conclusion, but your conclusion is so weak that okay. So you made this molecule, and it behaves somewhat similarly to the natural RNA molecule. That doesn't necessarily mean that A preceded B.
Now, I noticed that David's article originated was on the BBC News site. I'm wondering if the scientists themselves, or whoever wrote the paper, decided on that as a title for the article. Because if you get into the article, it seems like they're more moderate, more modest in their claims than the headline suggests. And I'm thinking some news guy put that on there. How does scientific impressions, this is going from the specific to the general now, certain impressions are created in the general population by headlines.
We
latch on to something and we say, oh, this is true. If we say it enough, after X number of repetitions, we believe it. Does this article have any significant impact at all?
Well, I mean, yeah, people will pick up on the title and will requote the title and not read the body of the information that's there and find out that they're saying if and but maybe if everything works well, then it's possible that this could be a precursor. But the title says that it is. So
yeah,
it is highly misleading. And the other article, which was actually in the BBC News article, Evolution Seen in Synthetic DNA. So these guys are actually stating that they have seen evolution in process. And let me just kind of backtrack and maybe reiterate a little bit or summarize what information I could glean from the abstract or from the article that was posted. These folks went one step further. So they've got a synthetic DNA, which they're calling XNA, X standing for xeno, and I couldn't find which sugar or five-ring structure they're substituting their DNA backbone with. but anyway, they are they've made this this strand of DNA, and then they make a whole bunch of strands. So they're synthetically, unless you have some way of directing specificity using natural molecules, by the way, you're not going to get specificity. So they then take all of these molecules that they've made, take DNA polymerase, which is one of the molecules that actually copies the DNA in the nucleus of the cell, and they're saying, well, we're going to let our collection of molecules bind or not bind to DNA polymerase. And we're going to keep those that bind to DNA polymerase. And so that's what they did. So they put DNA polymerase in the mixture with their XNAs, stirred them up, and then washed away all of the molecules that didn't stick. And then they went one step further, and they're saying, okay, now we'll take those that stick, and we are going to see if DNA polymerase will copy the information. So they put the mixture of energized, if you will, activated nucleotide bases in, natural nucleotide bases in with the soup, and sure enough, they got DNA. They got some DNA out of it with their sequence on it. And then they went one step further and said, well, okay, let's see if we can now take the DNA sequence that we made and go back and make our XNA structure, and they did. So they're saying, well, we were able to spawn genetic information with this process. Now, mind you, this is all in a petri dish or in a beaker or whatever, I don't know, mm-hmm. test tube, and not inside a cell. And they're allowing the chemistry that God created to assist them greatly in their process, which we can't forget, by the way.
Yeah, and they're going back to it, aren't they, on the other end? I mean, they're starting with it and they're ending with it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're doing a middle step that they claim to have control over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they don't even have control over it, because they can't synthesize the right molecule in the test tube in the first place, because they've got a collection of these molecules, and most of them they're washing away. Hmm.
And I didn't read the new article that you posted. I read the abstract. I would imagine that some other scientists somewhere would try to replicate this in real life. In mice, in lab animals, somehow that would be my assumption, to try to piggyback on this experiment and try to move it forward, and then spend the next 3 or 4 decades failing miserably, watching all their test animals die.
Yeah, what would be the outgrowth?
They are a long way from anything that happens in the cell.
Okay.
This is not putting a collection of molecules together and doing this chemical reaction using a natural catalyst, which is called the polymerase, DNA polymerase, is interesting. That, okay, yeah, they could do it, but does the real question in my mind, does it say anything about evolution, or that even evolution took place? Mm-hmm. And could this possibly be an alternative? One of the statements that they make is that there is no, there is nothing Goldilocks about DNA and RNA. There is no overwhelming functional imperative for genetic systems or biology to be based on them. Now, that that statement is in my mind ludicrous, because one, they're doing this in a test tube. Two, they have not shown that their new XNA, for example, or their TNA functions anything like the natural DNA in a cell system, in having the ability to not only form a double helix in the right configuration, but form this superstructure that allows 3 billion DNA base pairs to be compactly stored inside the nucleus of the cell. Now, to give you an idea as to how long 3 billion nucleotides is that it, if you took the all of the DNA in our cells and you stretched it out and put it end upon end upon end, you would have enough DNA to go from Earth to the moon and back again. That's how long it is. And that is in the nucleus of every cell in the body.
Oh, great. Now I got to be afraid I'm going to unravel at some point.
Exactly.
Just be this big pile of thread on the ground.
Keep your arms down.
Yeah.
So to make this claim that, we've changed. By the way, they're also using natural nucleotides, nucleotide bases in their structure. And they're also using the concept of phosphate. I mean, you know, they haven't even changed it to sulfate or something else, you know, so they're still using phosphate and they're still using the natural bases, and they've modified in a very, very conservative way the sugar structure, and were able to have DNA polymerase copy the information into a natural DNA.
Yeah, you know, not commenting on the science, but on the sociology of this. This looks to me like one wing of science trumpeting a claim, maybe a discovery, certainly the results of their work and their effort, and rather exaggerating it in order to help prove to themselves that evolution is so.
It's
like they're trying to convince themselves and us.
Right. It goes back to the premise that we have to keep looking inside the box instead of outside the box for an explanation for why this very complex molecule in the molecule itself is. I mean, we can understand it. Watson and Crick discovered the structure of it, and we've come a long way in being able. We've decoded. We've done the human genome project. Decoded all of the DNA sequence in our human genome. So we've come a long way in understanding a lot of functions within the cell, which of course we could use to benefit man, and that's how it originally was purported to be used. And there's a lot of good people out there that are trying to help people with genetic defects, for example, incorporate the correct genetic information into their cells, thereby helping to eliminate their genetic defect. But all that to say, when you make claims like this from the scant information that you're not information, but the scant experiments that you're doing, and claiming that this is how it could have happened, and there's no sacred cow, if you will, with regard to the DNA and RNA structure, is really far fetched, because there is so much more mechanism inside the cell and inside the nucleus than what these guys are ever dealing with to make that leap. And then to mislead the general public, because most folks are not going to read this article, or not even going to read the abstracts. They're going to read the title, maybe read the conclusion, and then recite the conclusion, you know, throughout the scientific world and in the media world, and say, hey, you know, we're just one step closer. See, I told you evolution mm-hmm. was proven. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is another step proving evolution. And if you look into the science, it's not.
And it also seems to me that the headline, particularly on the BBC page, was not written by a scientist. Was written by, you know, some copy editor somewhere that had, you know, he probably went to the same biology class that I did in high school and just barely passed. You know, he just knows how to string words together.
It's like David barely passed.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I've looked at those old grade report cards and I said, ooh. Let that guy out of high school.
So, Don, minute. This speaks to the whole process of how science speaks to the public and maybe how it gains research funds. You know, does that enter into it? Is there egos involved, reputations, aside from the basic science facts? Do those complicate the picture for us?
Well, you know, having been in the research area early in my life, the process of getting grants is you write up a proposal and it's got to have enough tantalizing information in it or a hook to mm-hmm. compete against all of the other scientists that are writing up, you know, grants. So if you want an NIH grant, you have to submit something that the NIH is looking for and is excited in. And, you know, anything with an evolutionary hook that says, well, we might be able to prove evolution, I would think would be funded, unfortunately, you know, by our tax dollars, mm-hmm. which is not something that I want to fund.
Uh-oh. David? Easy, David.
Now my blood pressure's
hit
going
a hot
up.
Spot. Okay. Yeah, that, yeah. Now, hair on the back of his neck just stood up there. Yep.
Now, in some of the information that of the article that you sent over, it was put together at Arizona State University, one of the better party schools in southern Arizona.
Yeah, it is. Not to be seen as a criticism, by the way.
No, I would never say that out loud, of course, but. But I went to school at Tempe for a little bit myself, and not in biology, in history. But I was looking for other information that would suggest there was a grant applied for and it was fulfilled. I'm seeing information about who wrote the grant and who wrote the manuscript, but both of them said there was no competing financial interest. So maybe it was just kind of a postdoctoral work. So.
Yeah. Oh, is it done by a postdoc? So, but yeah. the postdoc is operating under funds gotten by his major professor through a grant.
Right. Okay.
So these are just like the news article in BBC. I mean, it's a popularized article. It's not, you know, you have to go to the original journal article to really dig out that information.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you'll probably see that, yes, it was funded by a grant.
So how does a creationist fight this? You've got to find this whole process, the way it works in public, very frustrating, Don.
Oh, well, I think I'm beyond frustration. And I think, you know, one of the ways of fighting it is doing exactly what we're doing, is discussing in a rational way the conclusions of these experiments. Now, I'm not downplaying the experiments, but what I am arguing against is their conclusion that this shows evolution to be not only operative, but we've discovered a key so therefore, we're, you know, kind of worthy of getting more grant money so that we can continue this research. It's sad to me that we have to go to such extremes. Now, let's go back to the original article, because there's a point that I wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
If the bottom-down approach, which is what we talked about before in molecular biology or in this type biology in biochemistry, is that we look at the DNA or the RNA, in this case, possibly the TNA, and say that, well, that was a precursor to the RNA, which was then a precursor to DNA. If you look from the top down approach, which is that God created man on the sixth day, and he created man in his image, then you know that everything is in place when he created him. There is no TNA preceding RNA preceding DNA. It's DNA is there, which has the ability with all of the proteins and infrastructure necessary, the scaffolding that is inside the nucleus and the scaffolding that's outside the nucleus, inside the cell. All of that structure is there from the very beginning. So it's a totally different approach. And if you believe, for example, the top-down approach, there is no reason to even consider looking for or making, for example, something like a TNA.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like all I have done is uncovered just a little bit more of God's techniques and trumpeted it as in support of their original assumption, which is a huge assumption, that it started without God.
Right. And if they really want to start without God, then, of course, they have to make their own atoms, and then they have to make their own molecules, which then, but, you know, they're starting with God's material,
And that was my thought, you know, just as you said that. I said, you know, they're dealing with somebody else's tinker toys to try to replicate, you know, the their own version of it, and you know it doesn't. I guess I'm reflecting on the because internally I'm thinking about, gee, you mean Genesis had it not quite exactly right? What they meant to say was, on the sixth day God created TNA.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean there was a misspelling there or something in translation got dropped, but I mean, that I would think that. It just kind of demonstrates to me the final result of years and years and years in public education, that I've been indoctrinated to accept this notion that we've been talking about, and I accept it without even questioning it.
Yeah, you're right.
Which is barely thinking about it. Yeah.
It's called the dumbing down of people, or America, or of the world, because this is happening all over the world.
See, there's your theory of devolution again. The more I hear about this, the more I believe you. I think we should write our own papers on devolution, David. You and I could be prime examples.
Yes, we're great examples.
We're not as smart as we used to be.
Yeah, no, we're
we're living we're proof. Not.
Well, no, I'm getting smarter this morning.
Okay. Well, yeah, Dr. Don is a big help in that regard.
Let me also state, I mean, I have no problem with, you know, scientists, anybody else who wants to look at it, trying to understand how God put this world together and trying to understand biology, which is the pinnacle, you know, obviously, of God's creation here on Earth, is the complexity of biology, because there's far more information in the biological systems than in any inorganic cosmos out there, for example. So trying to understand the mechanism of the cell, trying to understand the interplay between thousands of molecules inside the cell and how all of this works, is a very admirable job, and you know, is to be applauded, because God gave us the ability to understand these things and to search out these things. But to come to the conclusion that, wow, we serve an awesome God. I thought God was awesome before. I mean, now, I mean, you look at the information inside the cell, and we see that it's packed full of these gigantic molecules, which somehow transmit their information throughout the cell from a signal outside the cell. I mean, it's just, you know, mind-boggling. And we should be saying, wow, what an awesome God we serve.
Indeed, and it's amazing to me. You can look out into the cosmos, the Hubble telescope, and all the marvelous tools that have been derived to help us do that, and you look at the big picture, and then you look at the tiny, tiny picture, and you see much the same thing: incredible complexity and beauty, and interaction. And It's an astounding thing, and you've helped clarify a part of it for us today, Dr. Don.
Yes,
Don Clark, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and you can learn more about that organization at creationmoments.com. He's also a biochemist, as you can tell. You've done work in this field, haven't you, in DNA and helping overcome chromosomal defects, haven't you?
Well, not necessarily in that field. What my PhD and subsequent postdoc experience was in large molecule structure function type of relationship. So doing, for example, very empirical, energy calculations to see where the flexibility in molecules were in what they might look like in three-dimensional, form, and what atoms are interacting with each other to help them fold the way they do, which gives them their structure. It gives them their function as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Don, you've brought light to the discussion this morning, and we thank you for that. And we'll look forward to speaking with you each and every Monday. Dr. Don Clark, he's in Texas. He's with creationmoments.com. And again, you can link to that website right off of ours if you'd like, brokenroadradio.com. You may be there. That may be there where you're listening from right now. Just over on the right side of the homepage, there's a link to creationmoments.com. It's a great resource for you, just for your own intellectual enjoyment or for your church, for Bible studies and small groups. It's just, Dr. Don, it's a blessing to have you. Thank you very much.
Mm. Thank you very much. Yes.
Well, thank you. It's always good to be with you, Jim and Dave, and I really enjoy these Monday morning talks.
Yeah, we'll look forward to the next one.
I have picked up more in this last 45 minutes than I did for the entire year during sophomore biology.
And the question is, Dave, can you hold it?
Yeah. Will I still have it tomorrow?
Now, we'll see.
I'd like to say thank you to Nancy Bakula.
Ooh.
Because she was the one that distracted me during that entire year of sophomore biology.
Oh, thank you, Nancy.
I'm not sure if thanking is the right word, but thank you, Dr. Don. That's great.